So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Life-saving heart surgery was performed on a baby in utero. This surgery saved the baby's life. That's right. Simple incision was made. Simple quote. And the baby was partially removed from its mother's womb. Little baby boy, little he, was removed from his mother's womb and surgery occurred. The baby was put back into the mother's womb, continued to gestate for 10 weeks, and then was born and is doing great. This happened this past summer. Adorable little baby boy. I'll share with you a little bit about this incredible story in just a little bit. Have you heard NASCAR has gone woke? They pledged to steer clear of any political things and maintain political neutrality. However, you may have seen recently in a tweet by NASCAR that now on social media they've shown that the NASCAR has now gone gay, LGBTQ, whatever you want to say. In fact, they showed their logo in full rainbow colors, representing the gay pride movement. Now, they've recently partnered with Carolina's LGBTQ plus Chamber of Commerce, and the NASCAR VP of Diversity and Inclusion has released some statements. First of all, hold on, I'm a little surprised. Since when is there a position, a vice president position, just for, quote, diversity and inclusion? I'm a little confused by that to begin with, but why has NASCAR gone woke? Why are many of our businesses going woke? Your business, many others, why are our family members going woke? Well, when it comes to businesses, the reality is that it's often about money. Who pays the bills? Who pays the sponsorship? Who puts the pressure on? And also remember, when it comes to federal funding, right now, a lot of the agenda surrounding money has to do with being very pro-LGBTQ and women's rights. So if you receive any sort of federal funding and you don't follow the status quo of the woke agenda that promotes abortion at all costs and the LGBTQ rights, well, then you could get canceled. And perhaps NASCAR didn't want to become canceled at some point. Perhaps they're concerned about funding. Perhaps they received a lot of money. All of these things are part of why we've been speaking as a church, especially in light of the Inequality Act and so many of the bills that have come up over the last year, of the idea and the importance of being self-sufficient when it comes to our funding as schools and churches, because then we do not have to cave and bow to a political agenda of wokeness. So NASCAR's gone woke. Who next? You know, you see, in just a little bit, I'm going to talk about the latest in women's college swimming. Have you heard the news coming out of Yale, University of Pennsylvania? Well, the news is this. Two men beat all the women in women's swimming. Yep, you heard me right. Two men. Coming up, I'll talk about that. But in light of NASCAR and the whole world going woke when it comes to the LGBTQ rights issue, I keep thinking of the words of Jesus Christ, where he said in John chapter 8, "You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." He says this right after he said, "You continue in my word, and you are truly my disciples." You see, Jesus Christ is telling us that if we know the truth will set us free. All we have to do is continue in the word of God, follow his precepts, follow his commandments, become his disciple. Will it necessarily always be easy? No, but he says, if you know the truth will set you free. Christianity is all about human freedom. It's doing what's right so we can live to our greatest potential as human beings. It's simple when it comes to the LGBTQ issue, yet we tend to complicate it and politicize it. We need to tell the truth about the human person when it comes to everything from the gay agenda to the transgender agenda. And that is this: biological reality matters, sexual complementarity is real, and this is all backed by science, from psychology, sociology, biology, physiology, we could go on and on. It's fascinating because if you actually read further into John chapter 8, the same chapter we've been talking about, how where Jesus Christ says, you will know the truth and the truth will set it free. This should be an inspiration for all of us to tell the truth about the human person, the human body, and to stand up against the false narrative that is stealing the happiness. And for some, one day the beatitude with our Lord Jesus Christ, because we are caving to a lie, we're caving to a delusion, we're caving to something that's not making people happier. Amputating, mutilating your body, creating a different chemical makeup, competing in a sport and beating a bunch of women when you're a man, that doesn't help someone psychologically. It doesn't help someone emotionally. It doesn't help someone physically. And all the governing bodies, from women's sports to universities who are being a part of this, are actually not just hurting the women who are being beaten, and we'll talk about that in just a moment, by men identifying as women in women's sports, but it's also not helping the person who's struggling with gender dysphoria. That's right, it's a dysphoria, and the American Psychological Association has always labeled it that. In fact, it still does. So stay with me as we'll continue to talk about this a little later. But what I was saying is, in John chapter 8, where Jesus Christ says, you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free, a little later on, he talks about how we become slaves. That's right, slaves to our sin. We become slaves to our own sin. So why is this important? Because we understand that when we don't tell the truth, we're promoting a false narrative. A false narrative that leads to other people living a false reality. Sometimes a delusional reality, or a reality that will not make them happy. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Stay tuned, because I will talk about how two men have beaten all the women in women's swimming at the university level. So please don't go away, because we'll unpack that. And it's a very important story for us to discuss. Okay, I have an incredible life-saving story to share with you. I am absolutely blown away by this. Now, I think I kind of just grossed my husband out just a little bit, making him look at photos of this. It's really cool. In fact, we'll post it. Lucas, if you could post on Facebook and Twitter right now. I already posted it on my Instagram at Timmerie, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. It's in my Instagram story. Here's the deal. A baby received a life-saving surgery in the womb. You see, the baby has something called intrapericardial teratoma. That is intrapericardial teratoma. What it is it's basically can lead to heart failure if not treated. There was a tumor pressing up against the left side of the baby boy's heart. It was blocking, therefore, circulation, and it was causing fluid to build up around the little boy's heart and his organs. So essentially what happened is, there are only two babies in the world who have successfully survived this treatment. Only two people in the world who successfully survived this treatment. And this little baby boy, Rylan Drummond, survived the treatment. You see, he was only about 30 weeks gestation, and in fact, he went through the surgery where the baby, he was partially removed from his mother's womb. An incision was made in the mother's abdomen. The baby was partially removed. Then they, with the baby, it's incredible. There are photos of this. And the baby, partially out, his head's in, his arms are out. The doctors, the nurses, the surgeons, they're literally holding this baby boy's hand through the surgery. They cut open his back and perform open heart surgery on a little baby. It's incredible. The photos, I don't really like seeing grotesque things, but I think especially when it comes to the issue of abortion, the fact that we're seeing such a life-saving operation occur, and how miraculous it is that this baby literally received open heart surgery inside the womb, was placed back into the womb, the mother's incision was then closed, and the baby continued to cook, continued to gestate for 10 more weeks. After that, those 10 weeks, the baby was successfully born. The baby is healthy and thriving. There are adorable photos of the parents coming home from the hospital, an adorable, happy little baby boy. Why is this all significant? Well, here's the reality. There are two options in today's culture when it comes to babies. It's either abortion or not abortion. And I don't necessarily say abortion, parenting, or adoption, because the reality is that for a woman who is abortion vulnerable, many of them have a hard time pondering adoption. I could never give up my baby, and therefore, I've spoken firsthand to many of these women. They therefore actually have the abortion rather than placing their baby for adoption, because they couldn't handle someone else parenting their kid. They couldn't handle not being the person to parent their kid. That's a whole nother conversation in of itself. I think it's heroic when a parent chooses to place their child for adoption because they recognize that they were not capable of being a parent that that child needed. And that's so important. But coming back to the topic at hand, you see, babies are either two things, wanted or unwanted. And praise God in this instance that this little baby, Rylan, was wanted. And he was fought for by the doctors. Now, in this instance, the baby boy had a mother and a father who were married. But what if this baby, with this severe, serious heart condition, with a little tumor pressing on his heart, leading to poor circulation and causing fluid buildup around his heart and organs, what if this baby only had one parent? What if these same doctors knew that there is a life-saving treatment that could be used successfully, potentially? Do you think that they would still fight for that little baby boy's life? Yes or no? Would they consider, oh, well, this is a single mom and she will have a hard life if the baby doesn't, you know, completely recover, or it would be harder for her to go through this alone, so we're just going to recommend that she has an abortion? This is very common. In this instance, this baby was wanted by his parents. He had a mother and a father. And might I add, there was a medical team willing to fight for his life. That's right, willing to fight for his life. What if those same doctors thought, wow, these are difficult life circumstances. Maybe we should give her the option to abort. This is a norm in our culture. This is the reality. We're going to unpack more of just studies that are shocking, should I say. An 85% false positive test rate for babies' genetic testing. That is the genetic testing that a lot of parents go through. I did not when it came to our baby, because this is usually used for many people who are considering having an abortion. I'll talk about that in just a little bit. But this is what's so important when we talk about human life. This baby boy received a life-saving treatment. He was partially removed while in the womb to have the surgery performed on his heart. And then put back in the womb. That's incredible. I know someone who had twins, and the twins were actually connected. They were growing into one another. And while in the womb, they received a very special surgery, a laser surgery, to separate the two little boys. Babies are doing fantastic. They're growing up. You know, we don't talk often enough about the miraculous life-saving treatment that can occur within the womb. This is why we come back to some of the Supreme Court cases currently before the Supreme Court. Some of them have to do with things such as viability, the ability for a baby to live outside of the womb. Currently, viability stands at 22 weeks. However, there have been children who have survived prior to 22 weeks, in fact, just over the last couple years, breaking world records when it comes to earliest birth. The problem is that in various states, unless that child is after the point of viability, that child can rightfully be aborted in many areas. In fact, abortion is legal through all 9 months of a woman's pregnancy federally, although certain states have passed local laws pushing it otherwise. But ultimately, federal law trumps. And so this is why this whole question about viability is so important. But even if a child isn't viable, even if viability changes to 15 weeks or 10 weeks based on a new and current growing, developing medical technologies, it shouldn't matter. We should still be fighting for these babies' lives, whether they're 10 weeks in utero, 25, or 30. This little baby boy received an in utero surgery where he's partially removed and then put back in. His mother was put back together. The baby then continued to develop, which, by the way, with no health complications for the mother or the baby boy. Praise God, Cleveland Clinic in Ohio was willing to fight for Rylan's life. Praise God, they had the attitude of saving both the mother and the baby. That a life-saving treatment could be done for the baby, that could help to give him a fighting chance, and indeed it did. We need to see more examples of stories such as these where parents are fighting for the lives of their children. But I fear because of our pro-abortion culture that if a parent comes in and they're single, that a doctor who could otherwise give life-saving treatment might consider not giving that treatment. Or if a doctor considered someone to be lower income. I remember a family member of mine a number of years ago ended up getting pregnant outside of wedlock. And she comes in, she and her at the time boyfriend didn't have insurance. They go through with receiving, various medical treatments as they're going through the process. Well, the doctors and the nurses had a very pro-abortion mindset with them. They encouraged them to, quote, consider all their options. They looked down upon them because, one, they weren't married. Two, they didn't have insurance. And three, therefore, the medical professionals considered it in their own eyes, this child to be a child that would be less valued, less wanted, wouldn't live as well. Well, my family member being extremely pro-life, of course, had her baby, got married, sure, not in the right order, but the reality is that unfortunately, as a society, the culture considers if you're not married, well, maybe we should encourage an abortion. If you don't have insurance, maybe we should encourage an abortion. We judge, we stereotype, and that feeds into a very pro-abortion culture. That could have been Rylan. He could have been aborted if his parents weren't married together and if they didn't want that child. It's a reminder to us to help support and promote a pro-life culture. Yes, people make mistakes. Yes, people don't do things in the right order. Perhaps a parent might not be involved in a child's life. Perhaps they might grow up into lowlier circumstances. But who am I? Who are you? Who is a medical professional to say when a baby's life should continue to develop and grow and be given birth to? Who are we to decide whether or not a baby receives certain medical treatment? That's a rationing of care for children in the earliest stages of development. That's a rationing of care for babies who can't speak up for themselves. It's like where we talk about the problem with rationing medical care for the elderly, especially as perhaps they're not as on top of their medical health care. That's unacceptable, and we shouldn't allow that to continue. We need to share the incredible story of Rylan, who survived a surgery partially in utero and then put back in that mom's womb and then ended up being given birth to 10 weeks later. This is a success story. This is a win. This should bring us hope to remember that we have medical technologies that can fight for and save children's lives, moms' lives, in seemingly impossible or life-threatening situations. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. I want to come back, diving a little deeper into this pro-life issue, talking about how the New York Times itself has discovered there's an 85% false positive test for babies' genetic testing claiming that there's something wrong with the baby, leading to any number of syndromes, and therefore leading to a number of parents choosing to abort. I'll be right back here on Relevant Radio, also discussing how two men, beat all the women in women's swimming this weekend. Are you tired of educational options that are one size fits all? Our sponsor, Colby Academy, offers the flexibility of both accredited online and traditional school-at-home options to fit the needs of your child. Visit relevantradio.com/Colby.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Have you heard this news about the new Fresh Prince of Bel-Air reboot? We're going to come to that in just a little bit. But first, I want to talk about the shocking news actually coming from the New York Times. They've discovered that 85% of the genetic testing that's done on babies in utero, those tests come back as false positives. In other words, women, mothers, fathers are being told that something is genetically wrong. Something's wrong, leading to some sort of chromosomal disorder in the baby. All those number of syndromes that so many people talk about, including Down syndrome, 85% of those tests are false positives. 85% of these tests and these diagnoses, which are leading many women to have abortions. I'll never forget when this was really first slapped me in the face, like firsthand, starting to see some of my friends and peers having children. Because I'd always known, and perhaps you don't know this, that in fact the genetic testing isn't very good for the baby to go through in utero. It's not very safe, especially if there are follow-up tests done that they commonly lead to miscarriage. So these genetic tests to begin with are not pro-life tests in terms of the safety of the baby. But they're also not pro-life tests because it also, we see in many instances, when the diagnosis comes up showing that there's some sort of potential for a syndrome, that parents choose to abort. Or it leads to increased fear and anxiety in the development of that baby. And the development of that parent as a new parent. As a parent to this particular child. I've known for years that, in fact, this isn't a healthy and safe test for babies. It can lead to miscarriage when done more than once. When ongoing testing is done. And so, I remember when I had my baby and the offer for the genetic testing while in utero was offered, I turned it down. Now, we also, though, I remember a few years ago, a friend of mine was pregnant. Now, she was pregnant with her first child and then her second. And I remember in both of those instances, she had so much anxiety as she approached the oncoming of a genetic test and the results. What if this? What if that? There was so much fear. But what I saw in her wasn't just fear. It was preparation for the rejection of herself having passed on something wrong to her child. Also a rejection of her child having something wrong with him or her. And I remember that anxiety was so intense. Anxiety alone for women can lead to miscarriage. And I remember just talking to her, you know, don't worry about it, whatever results you receive, you receive. So often, I don't know if you know this, but obviously you do now from the New York Times, wow, the New York Times sharing this, that many of those tests are false positives. And I've known this firsthand working in front of the abortion clinics, counseling women in crisis pregnancy, but also with women coming into our crisis pregnancy centers, that women will receive some sort of diagnosis with a potential syndrome that the doctor and some test is claiming that this woman's child will have. They're considering now having an abortion. Over and over and over again, the baby's born perfectly healthy. We always advise people and encourage them to understand these tests are often showing false positive results, but also things change. Babies are growing at a rapid rate while in utero. They have the best possible nourishment they could receive. In fact, so much so, when you're pregnant, all of your good nutrition vitamins go to your baby and you get what's left over. This is why women are told to take really good prenatal vitamins, because that can help with the deficiency that the mother's receiving as the baby's receiving so much of that great nutrition. You see, the baby is developing so rapidly that little things that might be wrong can be healed. In fact, we even heard the story recently where, yes, there was something legitimate wrong with a little baby, and that baby needed to receive a special life-saving surgery in utero. If you missed the story, incredible story. I really do hope that you'll go back and listen to this podcast, relevantradio.com/trending, or wherever you catch your podcasts. We're there. We'd love for you to subscribe and share, give a 5-star review. But here's the deal. We need to understand the reality of the impact that false positive tests have when it comes to babies and women choosing whether or not that child will live or die. You see, I remember my friend when the 2 times she was pregnant, the anxiety, the fear, the what ifs, the possible rejection of what she passed on, or the rejection even of her children. I also remember thinking, well, what will her husband think? Will he reject this baby if that baby receives an in utero diagnosis that is commonly wrong? Will that parent, will that dad then want to have an abortion? Will he be mad? And these are people who are relatively, I could argue, pro-life. These are people who their whole family was excited about them having children, but I could see the attitude that they themselves might have, that is specifically the parents, about maybe not wanting to give birth to a child who in their eyes isn't, quote, perfect what child is. You see, these tests, these genetic tests in utero, were really created for a purpose, and it's important we recognize this, to eliminate a population with any type of syndromes or problems. It was created specifically to use abortion in society. I remember when my sister went through with her having her first baby, and she was going through all of the series of testing and options. Do you want this test? Do you want that test? And she was asking, well, what is this? And she'd be asking various questions. And when it came to the genetic testing, she asked the nurse, well, why would someone do this test? You know, full of questions, being a first-time new parent. And she called me after that appointment because we hadn't talked about the test before. And she said, you know what my nurse said, or my midwife, nurse, whoever it was, said to me? She said that usually people only do this genetic test if they're looking for a reason to possibly not keep their baby. And she said, I was horrified. She said, there's no way I didn't want that test. The only reason that this nurse spoke so bluntly to me, because she could tell how excited I was about human life and about babies, and it was clear that this nurse was pro-life, and based on the kind of attitude I had, it was clear that I was pro-life, so she felt comfortable saying that to me. We had a long-winded conversation about the culture that is so pro-abortion just based on this one simple genetic test, that even pro-life people, or I'm not necessarily speaking of vocally pro-life people, but people who say, yeah, I'm pro-life, but maybe are a little less firm in their position. The excuses are so easy to be made to have an abortion on a seemingly, quote, imperfect child to some people. Oh, I'm thankful that my sister had the foresight to ask questions and know, and that also she's so pro-life that she would never do something such as having an abortion just because there's something that might be wrong with a child, or even if there was something wrong. But that's not everyone in today's society, in today's very pro-abortion society. You see these false positive tests? Everyone's talking about false positive and this and that when it comes to COVID. Well, what about babies who are being aborted? You see, these tests have a mental and physical toll on the mother, on the relationship of spouses, for one person wanting to keep a baby and another person not wanting to. What's fascinating is what we're talking about ultimately for parents is a, quote, risk assessment. At this point, given the diagnosis that they receive, that they believe is de facto, this baby is then determined to either be wanted or unwanted. That baby's life will only be fought for as far as that baby is wanted by his or her parents. This is why we need to do away with the fetal testing culture that is truly instilling fear in parents and outright, quote, selective reduction, that is abortion, selective elimination, the termination of a pregnancy. All of those words used by a pro-abortion culture to not outright say the word abortion, killing, or death. What happens if a person receives a test claiming that there's some sort of abnormality in their genes and their chromosomal makeup? Well, parents have 3 options. In their mind, they can birth a kid who may not live after birth, or may experience some sort of damage, syndrome, illness, serious ailment, mental illness. That's their first option. which to them often can sound bleak. But might I remind you, the New York Times itself found that 85% of these tests are false positives. That is, these babies have absolutely nothing wrong with them. A second option is to pay for additional costly testing for the baby to see, well, what is really wrong? Is this true? To verify, to get second opinions. Well, these tests in and of themselves have a very high miscarriage rate. They provide a risk to the baby. That's not pro-life. The third is abortion. And so I want to encourage you to share this news, to share this information. We'll actually post, if you don't mind, Lucas, we'll post that on social media now so that people can see this study and learn a little bit more about it and share with it. Great table conversation. I've come across so many people who have received false positive tests, but we perhaps didn't have the data at that time from somewhere such as in the eyes of the secular public as credible as the New York Times. But we've seen this firsthand in the pro-life movement for years, and this is why we always discourage genetic testing. So I encourage you to remember the story I shared just a little bit ago, where one baby boy, Ryan, was actually saved because he was wanted, because he had a medical team at Cleveland Clinic in Ohio willing to fight for his life. And this is why it's so important that we're willing to address the crisis occurring in our culture surrounding abortion. If Roe v. Wade is overturned in the coming year by the Supreme Court of the United States, if the topic and issue of abortion goes back to our states to decide for themselves whether or not they're pro-life or pro-abortion, what sort of restrictions will or will not be placed on abortion, well, that time will come. We've even seen New Jersey voting to make more permissive abortion laws in their state this week. We'll talk about that in a little bit coming back. What are we going to do to help promote a pro-life culture when perhaps abortion is thrown out legally? We have to work on the hearts and minds of people, and one of those things we have to work on is helping them to see the life-saving and changing care available, but helping them to see the anti-life testing that is out there to encourage them to have an abortion. Don't be duped, and don't allow other people to be duped by this testing, because it's leading to the ending of many innocent, voiceless, speechless babies' lives. And it's not okay. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. I'll be right back as I'll talk about how two men dominated and won and beat all the other women in women's swimming this weekend. And also, did you hear the news? Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is being rebooted. I'll share with you all about that in just a little bit.
You can listen to more of Trending with Tim Ray via the Relevant Radio app or at relevantradio.com/trending.
Solidarity HealthShare now offers a new program called Solidarity One. With Solidarity One, members decide what healthcare options best fit their needs and with the flexibility to meet any budget. Learn more at CatholicHealthShare.com.
In West Philadelphia, born and raised on the playground is where I spent most of my days. Chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cooling, all shooting some b-ball outside of the school when a couple of guys who were up to no good started making trouble in my
neighborhood. You all know this song. It's the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme song, the opening song. I think that was when we actually watched the opening to shows. And maybe because you didn't have the option to fast forward, rewind. Or who am I talking about? We don't fast forward and rewind. We skip, we jump today because we're not that patient to fast forward and rewind. You remember when we had to stop a movie and actually rewind it and you didn't want to go too far? Anyways, I digress. Here's the news. I just aged myself. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is being remade. I'm not excited about this. I'll tell you in just a moment, but here's a little glimpse of the new Fresh Prince of Bel-Air trailer. It's called Bel-Air. Check it out.
Maybe Will just isn't cut out for this. Why are we working so hard to save a boy who doesn't want to be saved?
Because we owe it to him.
A real man takes responsibility for his actions. A real man knows when to let go of his pride and make the most out of a second chance.
Be the Will who charmed West Philly with his talent and swag.
Let the music diffuse all attention.
Okay, that's the new trailer for Bel-Air, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air remake. What do you think? Well, okay, here's what I'll tell you. I'm not excited about this, and I will definitely not watch it. If for some reason people say it's good, I might check out an episode. But just based on the trailer itself, here's what I get from it. The trailer dropped yesterday, and it's being remade. No, the original cast is not a part of the story. I do not believe this is, and I'm not saying that The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was some great family-friendly show, but it was much more friendly than shows are today, and any of the innuendo usually wasn't blatant where it was creating scandal in the way that it would today. You usually had to be a little more mature to get what was being referred to. But here's the reality. As I was watching the trailer, 3 minutes long, I posted it on Twitter. If you want to watch the full thing, you can follow me at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. I also posted it on Facebook. What I see in the trailer are a few things. One, it seems as if the uncle and aunt of the Fresh Prince, who we know have always been extremely wealthy, living there in the heart of L.A., that, yes, they have their own servant or butler, as you'd say. You know, they have, you know, Carlton, who's a little pretentious, and but is fun and is close to the Fresh Prince. You know, all of these elements. But in this story, they make the family seem like this very party-esque elitist family. Now, Grant, yes, that's part of the story. They were wealthy. However, the difference in this one is that they make it seem as if the Fresh Prince, who used to be played by Will Smith, you have to learn more about the film, I post the link on social media, or the show, they make it seem as if he's a nuisance, as if they owe something to him. It's not just a matter of pity. It's obvious that the father does not, that is the uncle, playing Uncle Phil, does not actually want to keep the Fresh Prince. You see, Uncle Phil, who was played by James Avery, who passed away last year, Uncle Phil was known as being a great TV dad, a great influence on Will Smith. But in this story, it seems as if it's mom strong when it comes to the compassion, love for Will. And I think part of what so many of us loved about The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air before was the family dynamic, the quirkiness, the comedy dimension. Uncle Phil, who was a very strong fatherly presence and role model. I find it fascinating as The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, the remake, kicks off with the trailer coming out next month. And also, as we see the passing of the great star, the comedian who led us in the various America's Funniest Home Videos, in Full House, that we see stories of shows that had strong fatherly figures. And as these stories are being retold, the father's been eliminated, or he's there in the background, and the moms are strong. There's nothing wrong with strong moms, but I think our culture is remaking a lot of stories such as Fresh Prince and Full House, where they were male dominant in a certain respect, or should I say male strong, when it came to fathers. Maybe there's a reason that everyone's trying to remake films and content today, various shows, that resonated with families, resonated providing strong male fatherly roles. But when they're remaking them, they're actually destroying what was the heart of the show, being family friendly and having strong mothers and fathers, not just dads, not just moms. Or showing an example in the example of Full House, where something was missing. A father was widowed, and what a great story. His brother-in-law and his best friend step in to help raise those kids. They find a motherly figure in Aunt Becky. You see these examples of motherhood and fatherhood. And so I anticipate with Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, not looking forward to it. I do think it'll be woke. I think it's going to show a party lifestyle of the elitists of the aunt and Uncle Phil. And I think it's also going to lack a strong fatherly figure. I could be wrong, but based on the trailer, that's what we seem to see. You're listening to Trending with Timmerie here on Relevant Radio. It's great to be with you. I have a call coming in. I actually would love to hear this story. We were talking about fetal testing, that is the testing of babies in utero and the genetic tests that occur, and how the New York Times just found that 85% of these particular tests produce false positives. That is 85% of the time women are receiving diagnoses where they believe that something will be seriously wrong, a mental illness, an ailment, a syndrome that could lead to their child not surviving, or again, having a serious defect and therefore leading to many abortions. Calling now is Janet from California. Janet, what was your experience with this blood test, genetic testing for your baby?
This is 28 years ago, and I did choose a pro-life doctor, but unfortunately I was sent somewhere else to this lab, to the hospital, to have the testing taken, my blood taken, and I was informed about the results by a nurse. And the nurse was trying to talk me into having amniocentesis because she said that there's a 50% chance that my child would be born with Down syndrome. And I said, mm-hmm. I'm very pro-life. There is no way. I love my child. I have a son. I said, I love him very much no matter what. And it turns out my son was born. He learned to read. He really started reading at one. He's a genius.
Wow.
He started reading signs and things. And I knew all his letters. I mean, he's super, super smart, but he's super normal. He's very humble, on top of his class, and super successful now. But
praise God. Now, did he end up having Down syndrome,
kid.
Janet?
Pardon me?
Did he end up having Down syndrome?
No, he's brilliant.
Wow.
He's a genius.
Wow. Okay, so what a story, Janet. Here are you testifying 30 years ago, and the story is the same today, where parents are receiving these genetic blood tests for babies in utero. They're being told of things such as Down syndrome and other syndromes, mental illnesses, and serious ailments, believing that their child might not live or that their life will be completely impacted. And you just shared your baby boy was so smart, is brilliant, and he started reading at the age of one. No Down syndrome whatsoever. That's an incredible story. Thank you so much for sharing, Janet, because that is a powerful testament to the reality of the fact that these tests lie. And parents are choosing to not have their children. I can't imagine the parents who are looking at this New York Times revelation that 85% of these tests are false positives and looking and going, well, what if that was my baby boy? What if that was my baby girl? This is where we have to help mothers and fathers, endearing them to their children, no matter what they will face. It could be a child who's crippled, who struggles cognitively, who, yes, has Down syndrome. Or places such as the Netherlands and other places where they celebrate claiming that they've completely eliminated, they've killed, they've crushed Down syndrome. It's not a thing there. How did they do that? With genetic testing of possibility of Down syndrome and therefore the outright aborting of all of these children. Even here in the United States, the majority of children who receive a possible Down syndrome diagnosis or a true Down syndrome diagnosis are often aborted. It's like a death sentence worldwide. And that's what these genetic tests are doing to children. And yes, my producer just said, Lord have mercy, because I can't imagine what parents are going through who've had abortions based on these genetic tests. We need to get rid of these tests. Embrace what could be, yes, at times a challenge when it comes to a child. Life-changing and life-altering circumstances. But these tests are feeding and fueling a pro-abortion culture, and they will be used and continue to be used to try and keep abortion as legal. People are going to try to use these tests when we see abortion thrown out the door in many states, when Roe versus Wade is overturned one day. But the reality is that those babies who are aborted for various health diagnoses, many of these are false positive tests. And it's stealing motherhood, it's stealing fatherhood, and it's denying the life of that child. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. On that note, more shocking news, but news that should inspire us to continue to fight and tell and educate people. The New Jersey legislature has passed a bill legalizing the killing of babies all the way up to birth. Now, this is part of what we've seen in Roe versus Wade. It makes abortion legal through all 9 months of a woman's pregnancy, but various individual states have passed laws restricting it, although federal law still does trump. You can put no, quote, undue burden on a woman in accessing abortion. That's why this current case before the Supreme Court, if it doesn't overturn Roe versus Wade, will, I believe, result in massive pro-life restrictions nationwide. It will address the issue of viability. It will address the ability to uphold strong pro-life life-saving laws, which, by the way, has saved hundreds upon hundreds of lives alone, if not thousands, in the state of Texas. And so I want to encourage you, as we see laws such as these occurring, being passed in New Jersey and other states, that you and I in our individual states need to be prepared. And even if nothing changes with Roe v. Wade coming later this spring, that we are still willing to fight to pass laws in our state that, like in Texas, like in Mississippi, Ohio, and other states, has led to fewer women having access to abortion, which means more lives being saved, more babies being born. And guess what? Based on the pro-abortion turnaround study that came out a few years ago, there was a 10-year-long study on women who, when they went to the abortion clinic, were turned away from having that abortion. Time and time again, the further away from attempting an abortion that mother got, the more happy she was she kept her child. Once the child was born years later, that doesn't mean it was necessarily easy. Doesn't mean that there's not postpartum depression or anxiety or difficulty with means for some people, but she was happy she chose to keep her baby. This is what happens when access decreases. Women choose life. Women, even when perhaps we could argue have to choose life because they don't have access to abortion, those women are happier for it. And we need to promote that culture. And we need to be prepared with loving arms to embrace those people who would otherwise seek to have abortions. This is why supporting our local crisis pregnancy centers, this is why sidewalk counseling in front of the abortion clinic is so important. But also helping to know our loved ones, helping our loved ones know that if they were to face a crisis pregnancy or any sort of situation, that you would be there to help them, support them, to have that baby. And I don't mean just to support them because you love babies, but to support them because you love that person. And that person, even in the midst of circumstances that are not ideal, is worthy of love, respect, and mercy. That same mercy which our Lord Jesus Christ gives us in the sacrament of reconciliation, that we too can extend to others in our culture, especially surrounding the crisis we face of abortion. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. I shared with you about a story that has just been absolutely mind-blowing, and it continued to develop over the weekend. I shared with you last week about a man, a biological male by the name of Will Thomas. He's a senior at the University of Pennsylvania. For 3 years, he competed as a male swimmer, a male athlete. Well, after having been on hormonal replacement therapy, a testosterone suppressor, the NCAA, as well as the university there at Pennsylvania, ended up allowing him to compete as a, quote, woman. He identifies now as a woman. Well, he's been beating the women over and over again, and it's not fair. It's not right. He's been beating all the women in their own sport. That is women's sports. Now, the NCAA, as well as the university, has not had the backs of the women. In fact, he won and has even broken some records, competing just in December in the 500-yard freestyle preliminaries and finals at the Zippy Invitation at the University of Akron. He blew away his female competition. Now, I mentioned that his fellow competitors, all women because it's women swimming, 41 girls were considering a boycott of this weekend's meet. They decided not to do it for multiple reasons, concern over being considered transphobic, as well as knowing that the NCAA, as well as the University of Pennsylvania, do not have their back, and so they didn't trust the ramifications of their boycott, especially those seniors who are at the end of their competing time there at university. Well, what happened is this weekend they went for the meet. One of the schools they were competing against was Yale. Now, what else beyond Yale? Yale and one other school. I can't remember. Oh, Dartmouth as well. Now, they were competing against a school. Well, as we know, this young man who identifies as a woman, he goes by Lia Thomas. Well, he dominated in two of the races. In fact, he won the 200-yard and the 500-yard freestyle, but then finished in not so great place at the 100-yard freestyle during the school's tri-meet with Yale and Dartmouth. Well, guess what? Guess who beat him in the one race? guess who beat him in the female race? The one race he didn't win was by a Yale athlete in women's sports who is also a man pretending to be a woman. I am flabbergasted by this story. We are seeing the outright destruction of women's sports. The permissiveness by universities, the NCAA, and all of the sports governing bodies who are cowering to an agenda that is actually harming those athletes who are experiencing gender dysphoria by supporting and encouraging cross-sex hormone treatment that is damaging, cancerous, leads to anxiety, depression, among many other things, including suicidal ideation. They're also allowing for women to have their championships, titles, scholarships, the future of playing taken away from them. We need to tell the truth about the biological reality of the human person. We need to tell the truth about the sexual complementarity of the human person. Remember, Jesus Christ said, "You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." We need to be willing to help set others free when everyone from NASCAR to you name it is woke, promoting an LGBTQ agenda. We don't have to go there. This is Tim Ray from Trending with Tim Ray. Wednesday, join me for Gentleman's Hour. Any question will do. I would like to hear from you, gentlemen. We'll also discuss dealing with insecurity if you're not the primary breadwinner. Does that need to change? What does providing for the family mean other than finances? Join me daily at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.